church when I teach here at Yeshiva Hadar, which is a wonderful place to be and learn. And there's even learning here, not just on the Global Day of Learning, so you should check out other things that are happening here. Monday night, open baby drash lectures, and Tuesday, other exciting things happening throughout the year. So I want to share with you a midrashic reading of one of the either very famous or perhaps for some very infamous chapters of Tanakh, chapter 31 in the Book of Proverbs, known as Eshet Chayil, the woman of Balak. So, we'll pass this text around, though I imagine most of you have seen it before, perhaps even sing it every week. And what I really want to do first is give you a chance to read over this chapter in English or Hebrew with somebody sitting next to you. You can call them your chavruta for those couple of minutes. And, you know, try to just get a sense of what this poem, really, at the end of the Book of Proverbs, means to you. And what I want you to look out for are things, images, words that might speak to you in this description of the woman of Balak.
Do you have any more books?
They're not enough. You can share. I'm sure we can make one copy. So look for things in this chapter that stand out and speak to you, and things that stand out as things that distance you from this chapter. Right? And I imagine people might be coming in already with a sense of how you feel about this poem about the Woman of Valor. So make sure to kind of bring those reactions with you, but also maybe be ready to shift what those are, but just be open to what the text says. So starting now with the person sitting next to you, and just read through the whole thing out loud, and we'll come back together in about 5 minutes.
We can catch up after.
Wonderful to put a face to it.
Yeah.
A woman of valor. So
glad I loved it. It was for me to read it. It has the heart of her husband, Dr. Nancy Trumpeter, and he has no lack of game.
She gives all and her black.
For me, what I would love, she is like the merchant ship. She brings her food in the bay. She married a girl from Florida.
Right, so it's part of like what you've been through. So I think this picture what you've been the thread onto, and the distaff is what you turn around. Something that like two parts of like the thing that you do.
I'm not afraid of her. No.
She is
Out as something
The expectations are very, very high.
The expectations are high. Okay, that's enough. Expectations are high, yes. And again, this is against the backdrop of the book of Proverbs, which has described many times, right, the evil woman, the seductress, right? And then finally, at the end, Isha Tayomi said how difficult it is to find a woman valor.
But
it's possible that
these... Proverbs were written.
That's a hard question. I think it's on the later end of the Bible. Yeah, you have some similar styles in the book of Sirah. I'm not going to give you a year. Do you have a year?
Ben Sirah?
No.
Or
for
Proverbs. Well, if it's like Ben Sirah, Ben Sirah is like 2nd century BCE. That's really late.
Yeah, so I don't... Not okay, but I think it's on the later end. Okay. Yeah, and some people really read both the woman of valor and the evil seductress in the book of Proverbs as really metaphors, right, for the good life and the bad life. Okay. Other thoughts? So high expectations. Yes, just what are your
names? My name is Deborah, and I was just talking to this in the previous class with you and Calvin. The people that were the writers that we're speaking to were not women. Women were not told that they could write books, publish books. So we're already limited by that.
Okay.
So this is someone who's not a woman is speaking here about women.
Okay.
So therefore, they only relate to a woman as a wife and a mother. Like I was saying, I'm proud of line 17, which is just about women in general. You know, and for line 28, if you don't have a husband and you don't have children, women have to praise themselves or praise each other.
Yeah.
So to me that would be a weak point because, but again, this was not written by a woman for it. It was written from a man's perspective, who is either a son or a husband. So he would be looking at the woman differently. So I have compassion for the guy. He doesn't know what it's like to be a woman. How would he know?
Okay, but just general disdain, because it's not coming from a woman's perspective, a woman's experience about her life. It's written by a man, but also because of that, it sort of filters through
his perspective. Exactly, that's my point.
Okay.
My name is Holly. For me, she comes across as the mistress of the house par excellence. And if there's a lot of wealth. I mean, that's what I was paying attention to. I was just circling things, and it's rubies, and it's wool and flax and scarlet and purple and linen. These are things that most people do not have. And she's not a master of the house, mistress of the house in terms of two kids and, I don't know, nothing much going on.
And a vineyard.
She's a CEO of the house, and there are slaves, and there's winter coming, and do they have warm clothing? Is there enough rain?
She plants a vineyard.
She's a businesswoman, and that to me is very interesting because it's definitely not what most women are doing, if they even have a house that is of the size and the resources.
This is the 1%.
But look at how hard she works.
Okay.
She's not, you know.
Yeah. Okay. But within that, right? Within that particular class, which might be hard to find this woman because there's not that many women who are this wealthy. But within that class, she does seem to have quite a lot of power running the state.
Right.
Yeah.
Responsibility for many mouths to feed.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, Mary.
There's a strength to her. She's not a passive person. She's out there taking things and doing it. Now, whether or not we can identify with her, like what she's doing, I think it's a good concept of the sign, but she's not just sitting around. She's strong.
And was that surprising to you? Was that surprising to anyone to find in the biblical text describing a woman? Give us a line that stuck out to you as her showing her strength.
She seeketh will of flesh. She stretched out her hand.
Great. We also have a description of a fleet of ships, right? That seems pretty far-reaching. So I think it can be helpful to just actually see how many of these images might not have been your initial association with a biblical woman and what she did.
Or she considered the field in bias.
She's also, she's not just someone who works hard for her household, but she also has these sort of positive character traits that don't even have much to do with her role. She
she's wise, she's kind, she feeds the poor. You know, that she laughs at the future, which not totally sure what that means, but you know, she's optimistic, I guess. You know, and she's God fearing, and those are like, it's not just that she's being valued because of what she does for others, but she just has these like generally positive.
I think it's an amalgamation of a lot of different women. Not
one. Oh, good. Okay, that's a good segue. Thank you. What's your name?
Karen.
Okay. Thank you. So we'll get to that in a second. It feels to more like an amalgam. Lots of different women. Now, why would you say that?
Because there are a lot of different types of characteristics. You know, I mean, it's definitely from a man's point of view. I mean, how could one woman be all of this?
Responding to our first comment from Marion, high expectations. Well, it's high expectations if one expects all of this from one person. It's sort of like the superwoman, right? The woman who's supposed to run the household and have a career and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right? That kind of image. So you're sort of getting at one of the problems in the text is if you associate all of this with one woman, sort of on this pedestal, containing all of this in an ideal way that seems very difficult to imagine any one person being able to contain. Even if like, the kind of attributes that Sarah was bringing out might be something that we would all strive for, right? That sort of image of being able to strive for all of those positive traits. Somehow, putting all of this together as describing one woman just doesn't seem realistic. Okay, take one more comment, then we're going to move on.
The problem here is not the one woman, it's the one man described it.
The one man.
Who doesn't, who's Yoshe, but she's throwing the car. He's just sitting in the, with the, he's not doing, he's just sitting.
Right, okay, so that's a good question. I mean, what is he doing? It's possible that it's sitting in the gates means judging.
Right, but it doesn't.
It could be a certain role. Like,
but yeah, it's possible that she's got all these, doing this, this it's about
she's
her.
She's really multitasking.
And then the only thing they say about her is that she's throwing the car. It's like somewhere there, outside the house.
Yeah. I think that
okay, yeah, one at a time. Go ahead.
The writer's governed by the alphabet, or by the alphabet.
Yeah.
So that's indeed why there's so much here, because we're going from Aleph to Tom.
Okay, good. You go back to that.
Just to add on to Ari's point, but the second line says, Betach Balevala. He puts his heart, he trusts her to do all of these things. So there, it's not, the focus of Eshet Chayil isn't on the husband, but there's this understanding that they are working together as a team and she is entrusted to him all these things while he is just others.
Right, and this poem just isn't about those other things. I want to actually pass this chair back.
Super, thank you.
Okay. So I think in some ways what I want to take Karen, and what was your name in the green?
Mindy?
Okay. Great. You could look at high expectations, the amalgam as, well, here's someone trying to describe a woman from A to Z, and if you sort of pictured it as a sonnet, almost the way that it's kind of sung practically around the Shabbos table today, right, as sort of a poem for a particular person, then, right, it might be idealized because you're sort of trying to express that there's just so many wonderful things about this person. You could describe this person using all those letters of the alphabet. You could look at it that way. But what I want to sort of get into is how I think a lot of reactions to Eshet Chayil do come from this problem of, right, there being the woman of valor who has all of these specific traits. And I think sometimes when we sort of think of how we encounter this text from a modern perspective, it might do us well if we could say, no, there isn't just one woman of valor, whatever that means. Right? There's lots of different ways to be valorous, or there's lots of different ways of being a woman. But if we can sort of fracture the woman of valor and see lots of different pieces here, to get a reading of a more diverse, right, model. And I think that could be a very powerful way into the text. And that is, in fact, what the Midrash says. If you turn to page 2. This is a Midrash
from Midrash Mishlei. Read a Midrash on the book of Proverbs, but it's also found in a later collection that you have in front of you here, Midrash HaGadol, which is a very late Midrash, medieval Midrash collection, although the texts that it has in it are coming from the earlier times. And I first got to see this Midrash when I was working with a woman named Nina Edelman, who's a writer, a scholar, and we'll get back to some of the work she's done on this a little bit later. But as you can see here, I didn't translate this, we're not going to look at the whole thing, right? But I gave you in sort of bigger font the first letter of each verse, right? Which is an acrostic, as you can see, from Aleph all the way down. This only goes to Shin, not Tet. And each verse is actually associated with a different biblical woman in this Midrash. Although Aleph, I put in bold here, who is associated with Aleph is actually Abraham Vissara, right, focusing on the couple, that the point here is about finding a good match. But then if you go down the line, right, Bet, you see is Sarah, Gimel, Rivka, Dalet, Leah, Hey, Rachel. Not unexpected to see those four women. It kind of makes you wonder whether this is so specific or just kind of going chronologically. But there's some that are a little bit more surprising here. Vav is Batya, daughter of Paro. Right, we don't even know anything about her husband. Well, other than a verse in the Book of Chronicles, but most of them don't know very much about her husband. So to get back to that point, is this really only relational? If you jump down to Lamed, right? Lo tira levecha mishalek is Rachav the Zona, Rachav, who's not really known as loyal, chaste. she's perhaps running some kind of prostitute house or something like this, right? She has all of her guests. So some of these are a little bit surprising, right? You also have in Pei the Isha Chachama, who advises Yoav in this interchange, and the Shunamit, right? Who we just, what about her? Sons get to rest. So it's an interesting list here, but what I really think is sort of the most powerful thing that this Midrash does and sort of work that it does is actually say there is no one Isha Chaya. And there's no way, like Karen said, that you could describe one person with all of these verses. And in fact, it sort of forces you to diversify your sense of, at least what it means to be a good woman, and perhaps even your sense of gender, I would want to say, which we could use it in that direction today, right? So this is what I mean by reading for diversity. A Midrash that sees a poem that's all about one woman and says, no, it's not. This is actually a diverse array of different women, which also leads you into the complexity of each of their stories. And that's really where I want to go next. So we're going to focus on the verse, the pasuk for the letter Ayin, which you actually referenced in that, which is a little cryptic. So in our Midrash here, you can see if you jump down to the letter Ayin, Oz Vahadar Levusha, that is actually associated with Elisheva Bat Aminadab. Does anybody know who Elisheva Bat Aminadab
is? Yeah, she was the wife of Aaron.
She's the wife of Aaron, exactly, which we know from the book of Exodus, the sixth chapter, where we have a great genealogy. Yeah, so flip back to the front of your page, and we'll just
lost
read
her
that
two
whole,
sons in, yeah, in the strange fire.
Exactly. We'll read the whole verse, and then we'll do some of the Midrash work here. So it's verse 25 on the front of the page. And Karen, maybe you'll read that first, because you quoted the end before. Read it in Hebrew and English.
Sure. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the times to come.
Yeah. So just before we jump into the Midrash, what did you think that verse meant? What does that
pasuk mean? To me, I think it meant she wasn't afraid of dying.
Not afraid of dying. But tifchak miyom acharon, she's sort of at peace with what will come in the end. Okay?
Acharon means to come.
Hmm? Acharon means the last. The last day. Right? So Mary taking the last day. The day of her death. Yeah,
I take it quite differently. I take it as living in the now, where she doesn't have the negative habit of visualizing bad things and worrying verbally, where she's cleansed her mind and her speech to be in the now and is laughing at the things to come because she knows the only true time is in the present.
So her attitude towards the future is sort of to laugh at.
It's not perfect. Right, it's the opposite of someone who is verbally worrying or mentally visualizing the bad thing. She's in the present.
Okay. She's not laughing, she's playing, right? It's a different route.
So she's a non-worrier.
Kind of like Yitzchak that we saw in our Parsha. It's not clear how these roots are related. They seem to both have to do with laughter, playfulness.
Yeah, to me that would imply fearlessness.
Okay, fearlessness.
There's my imagination of both the Dalai Lama tries. She's fearlessness and also like queenliness.
So connecting the two halves of the verse, right? Where is this fearlessness coming from? From like sort of a great sense of dignity, honor.
And she's not laughing,
she's
not the end, but she doesn't laugh now.
Do you read what she's talking about? Right now she's sort of reserved and dignified, and it's only at the end that she'll be able to
know.
Okay?
I would say that I read the second half of the verse, and she's very confident. Confident in herself. Because she has so much strength always with her daughter. And that gives her confidence that even at the end she'll be judged.
So maybe going on, why might she not be worried about the day of her death at the end? Because she's confident in how she's lived her life. Okay. So now the question is sort of, what happens when we take all of this and plug it into a story of a particular woman, which is what the Midrash invites us to do. Right? How does that affect our understanding of the verse?
Is the Midrash specifically about this proverb?
So I'll tell you about that.
The other door.
It pushes them.
But no one needs the other door.
So what I mean is... Okay. What I mean is, right, when you look at the Midrash that I gave you on that second page, which is a Midrash on Mishpego, it's actually found in Midrash HaGadol, and the other place that it's found, it's in the book of Genesis, actually. On Parshat Chayei Sarah, which is this week's Parshat, and it's thrown in there because it's actually listed as a eulogy that Avraham gave to Sarah his wife. That's why it's there in Bereishit. But over the course of that, you get this version of the Midrash that we have here, and what I mean by invite is to say that when you get to that verse that we just read, verse 25, Ayin, and the Midrash says, Oz v'hadar levusha, she's clothed with splendor and glory. Do Elishava bat Aminadav, that person, that woman who is clothed with glory and honor, isn't actually some abstract woman in the Book of Proverbs, but is a specific woman, Elishava bat Aminadav. Then suddenly, that invites us to think about the story of Elishava bat Aminadav, Aaron's wife, and what this line might mean within her story and her life and her narrative. That's what I want to do now. So, if you turn to page 3, we're sort of jumping at this other angle. Same story, right? There's a place in Tanakh, which happens all the time, where there's not mention of any woman. Even though it seems like that moment might have been a very significant moment for a particular woman, right? And so one of these is in the book of Vayikra, right? When we have the story on the eighth day of the dedication of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle, after there's been all of these festivities, right? There's been all the sacrifices that have been brought, right? Moshe has gone in to the Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting, right? Moshe and Aaron have come and blessed the people. It's really a climactic day in the story of B'nai Yisrael in the desert. And then we have this tragedy of Nadav and Abihu, the sons of Aharon and Elishama, who bring a strange fire into the tabernacle. So would somebody like to read these lines for us in English? This is chapter 10. Let's have someone who hasn't jumped in yet.
And Nadav and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took each of them his censer and put fire therein, and laid incense thereon, and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. And there came forth fire from before the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. Then Moses said unto Aaron, This is it that the Lord spoke, saying, Through them that are nigh unto me I will be sanctified, and before all the people I will be glorified. And Aaron held his peace.
Okay, so a very famous excerpt of the Torah that's given rise to many, many commentaries in terms of what exactly is going on here. Right, but the sort of thing that I want to point out here right now, Aaron held his peace, Vaidom Aharon. Right, Aharon's response is silent, and that's recorded. It's recorded that he had no response, sort of the emptiness of his response is recorded here. And we know nothing of how Elisheva the mother responded, which isn't so surprising, right? We don't really expect, we get used to as we read through Torah, not to expect to have experiences of women necessarily recorded, especially in, right, Vayikra, which is all about the tabernacle and sacrifices and priests, and it's not necessarily a place where we imagine women being in general. Right, so in some ways, it's all the more surprising, I think, that the Midrash wants to see Elisheva on this day, on this eighth day of the dedication. And the way that it does that, partly, is through Eshet Chaya. Right, so one text that has all these verses about women, one text where there's really... There's missing verses, right? We have something missing or silent about the experience, and they are going to meet, to some extent, in the Midrash. Right? So now, we can go to number four, which is reading from our Midrash, this Midrash HaGadol, and what it says about Elisheva. Okay, so who would like to read this, number four, Midrash HaGadol? We can manage this in Hebrew and English.
Yes, right. Like that's
any teacher?
And then there's another tower
here. All
right. עוד שעד על לבושה, זו אלישבע שראתה ארבע שמחות דרך יבמה מלך, אישה שמחות מדרך, אחי הנשיא בניה תאונה, בניה תאונה. She is clothed with strength and glory. This is אלישבע, who saw four celebrations on one day. Her brother-in-law was made king, her husband was made high priest. Her brothers made up all chiefs of the tribes. Her sons made officials of the priesthood.
Okay. So, on one day, right, one day, what is the one day?
This
eighth day, right? Eighth day of the inauguration of the Mishkan. Now let's just make sure we have all these characters. It's interesting how they're described. Right, her brother-in-law was made king. Who's that?
Moshe.
Being called king. Yeah, it's really interesting, right, that his role of leadership there is actually being called Melech.
But he's never identified in the Torah as well.
No, he's not. You might be able to play around with the beginning of the last, right, part of Devarim, Vayhi Bishurim Melech, when the king was ruling and all the heads of the people were together. I think there's some interesting that one read that as Moshe. But no, not in Pshat. He's not. Okay, her husband was made high priest. Who is that?
Aaron.
Okay, let's see there. Her brother made chief of all the tribes. Nachshon ben Aminadab. Now, I'm assuming that's because they brought the first of the offerings, perhaps, for the Mizbeach.
But also, when the tribes were traveling in the desert, they were divided into four camps.
Right.
And Nachshon was ahead of the Yehuda.
I know, but what that has to do with the eighth day of the dedication. Yeah. No, that's true. Yehuda was definitely in a situation of leadership in the desert, in the encampment. But we're looking for something that happened on that one day. So that's why I would connect it maybe more to the bringing of the offering, perhaps. Okay, and then her sons made officials of the priesthood. Nadav and Abihu, presumably. And that is on Ogva Hadar Levusha. Okay, so what's strange about this midrash? Our Bas Simachot, the Yom Echad, four celebrations in one day, Elisheva, that's her experience of this day. What's strange about this? Right, there was another big part of this day.
Maybe it didn't happen yet when they wrote this.
Maybe, no, it could be referring
could be
to the
early
that
high noon, yeah.
Yeah, did you want to jump in? Okay, all right, so that's a weird thing conceptually about this midrash. It doesn't seem to capture her full experience of that day. There's also a strange thing textually about this midrash. Oz v'hadar le'busha.
Well, it doesn't give you the second half of that.
Right.
You
can ask
the future. Oh, if she had known, right? She
wouldn't
be laughing.
Yeah, right. But Tipak Me'om Acharon seems like it's difficult to describe Elisheva as laughing. Right? Especially once you said that this verse is about Elisheva's experience of this day. Right? It hardly seems, especially Yom Acharon, right there. The last day, but I don't know, if you read that at maybe the end of the day, it just seems like it's sort of missing something.
Well, this may have been the day that her son dies, maybe her last day in essence.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe it's almost saying the completeness. If you would sort of look at the full picture of Elisheva and her life and her experience, eventually, even though this moment was really like a roller coaster, and a downturn, eventually, but to conquer the offer. Okay, so there's another midrash, thank God. We're not left dangling here. There's another midrash that deals with a similar kind of moment, right? Same moment, Elisheva on this eighth day, right? But this one, this midrash is coming from the book of Kohelet, Ecclesiastes. This is a little more ironic. We'll look at that. So who would like to read this very short verse from Kohelet, Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 2? Global Day of Jewish Learning, come on, jump in. Yeah,
okay. Melissa. Abruptly I said, it's mad. Merriment, what good is that?
Okay, so you can see how like that verse is probably going to be a good entryway into this day, right? That was such a mixture of joy and also, right, this tragedy that almost maybe could undermine the whole sense of the power of the joy. Okay, so let's read this midrash that is now on this verse in Kohelet. Any taker can read this in English.
Another explanation of merriment, I said, it's mad. How mixed is the joke that the attribute of mercy played on Elisheva's daughter?
Right, let's just say the attribute of judgment. That's a pretty important typo.
Another explanation of merriment, I said, it's mad. How mixed is the joke that the attribute of justice played on Elisheva, the daughter of Amminadab? Elisheva, daughter of Amminadab, saw four celebrations on one day. Moses, her brother-in-law, was made king. Nalshon, her brother, was made chief of all chiefs of the tribes. Aharon, her husband, was made high priest, clothed in the precious gems of the Ephraim. The two sons were made officials of the priesthood. But when they went inside to offer incense without permission, they were burnt up, and a joy was turned into mourning. That is what is meant. That is what it means when it says, of joy, what good is that? As it says, after the two sons of Aharon died.
Okay. So, right, this midrash, just working on that verse from Ecclesiastes, right, the prototypical moment that it can imagine, although this is only one of many, there's actually a few, of a time where suddenly joy is turned on its head, totally undermined, right, turned into sort of a mockery of itself. The moment that it sees as describing that feeling so strongly is Elisheva on this eighth day. Right, where all of these celebrations, the four celebrations that we saw before, are suddenly overturned by right, by Midat Hadin and her two sons dying. So, right, the question is there any way that we can put these two kind of pieces of Midrashim together? Right, we have the one that we saw from Midrash HaGadol that focuses only on Oz Vadar Levusha and the celebration that Elisheva experienced. We have this other one from Kohelet that talks about Midat Hadin, right, laughing or making a mockery of joy that Elisheva experienced on that day. Right, what happens if we try to put these together?
Well, it's kind of the idea that, you know, all our great, you know, glory in our plan, God laughs at this. You know, well, I said that she laughs at her future. It's really like God laughs at it, because with all the glory, who knows what comes next?
So you would say that Tishchak Leom Acharon, that second half of the verse might be about God. God laughs. But if God gets the last word.
I don't quite understand, but it's the ultimate and then the downfall. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't know enough to be upset about it initially. She's enjoying it, and then she laughs at the future, but it's going to get her the end. Mm-hmm. Well, more than God has left her.
Mm-hmm. So she's laughing, but then really...
But she's laughing incorrectly.
Okay.
Well, you know, I was thinking that it's that life is a mixture of joy and sadness. You know, when you go to a wedding or a bar mitzvah or something, people always say we should only simchas. When you're saying goodbye or something. But life is not just simchas; it's a mixture. And I thought of this thing that happened. A woman who I was friends with at work. Quite a number of years ago, she lost, her son died. It was a really horrible accident. He fell out of a window that didn't have a child guard. And she was just totally devastated, anyone who's, you know, lost a child or knows someone who's lost a child, it's like it's an amazing loss. And a few weeks later, another friend of mine from work went to a Broadway play, and she turned around, and sitting like a few rows behind her was this woman, Suzanne, with her daughter and a bunch of her daughter's friends. And she said hello to her and stuff, and she tried to, like, you know, talk to her, but she looked like sort of totally lost. It was right before the play was going to start. And I then came to work the next day, and she told me the story, and she said, She said to her, like, how could you come to this Broadway play when you just lost, you know, your son, Tristan, a few weeks ago? And I guess Suzanne sort of read it in her face, and she said, it's my daughter's birthday, and we had planned this part, you know, we had planned to do this with her and her friends, and it's sort of like life, you know, sort of goes on.
So Batitzak Leom Acharon as a sort of striving for joy to ultimately be able,
yeah, right, to restore life, or that life goes on.
Okay. Any other thoughts on how these two midrashim might intersect?
You said before something about laughter being mockery, and I would take issue with that. We don't know that the laughter wasn't either pure joy or mockery. So it's possible that the laughter could be interpreted either way. It could be laughter to just celebrate and be in the now, or laughter meaning mockery that we don't know from moment to moment what's going to happen, but we do have a choice about how we respond to what happens. In other words, God will make anything happen, but the only thing we can control is how do we respond to that. Do we respond with laughter, saying, okay, this is God has some plan, I have no idea what it is, I just need to live my life according to, you know, the Jewish way? Or, you know, or is it, because when I hear mockery, I don't, you know, I hear, like, yeah. Shlomo would say, brother devil, you know, it's not really joyous.
Yeah, great, okay. So I think, go ahead.
Could it be that strength and dignity, you need strength and dignity in good times and joy? You need to possess strength as much as for for bad times, you know, in terms of, and that, so if you, you if that plays both ways, then the other one, could it be that, you know, to laugh and to cry out, and you can see two meanings for that, that she laughs at it and cries out,
Simultaneous.
Well, not simultaneous, but just in different times. You're called on strength in different, you know, for good times bad, and you're, you either cry out sometimes for anguish, or you laugh at, you know,
ways of reacting. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the mockery was coming from that Ecclesiastes from Kohelet Rabbah that talks about the attribute of judgment, right? I mean, that's a deen that it seems like it's reading about Tzitzchak as playing a joke on her. Yeah. Right,
cruel joke.
As, yeah, you spoke as a cruel joke. Exactly. So I think that's where mockery is coming from. So what I think is interesting about this, now we don't really know what time period all of these midrashim are, but we do know that Midrash HaGadol is quite late. Right? So it's possible that it has something like this Kohelet Midrash that it's drawing upon. It's some tradition about these four experiences of joy that Elisheva had that day, right? And yet, what I think is so interesting about this is it doesn't include those two tragedies, right? In the Midrash HaGadol that says, Oz v'hadar d'vusha, death Elisheva, it seems that it only wants to include, right, the joyous celebrations, even perhaps beyond that, right, the joy in the great height to which all of these men, all of these various men that Elisheva is associated with, rose to. But that's what it sees as being the Eshet Chayil moment. Right? But if you go deeper and sort of follow the invitation of the Midrash to read this pasuk about Elisheva, and that allows you to uncover this full Midrash, right, that includes those tragedies in all of the complexity that was this day for Elisheva, right? Well, what happens if you turn all of that into Eshet Chayil and say that Vatitzchak Liyom Acharon, right, that root again, Tzachak, isn't necessarily Midat Hadin, but is somehow the fullness of Elisheva's response to that day, even if that includes some sense of irony, but a sort of ultimate movement towards some kind of joy or some kind of full reaction to that day. So the main thing that I want you to see here is, right, A, the power of the Midrash HaGadol that says, Eshet Chayil, not about one woman. Each line is actually about many different women, and you really couldn't have it any other way. The diversity of the experiences we have here are too rich. Right? But then number two, right, once it does that, and it tells me, oh, I can read this line about this woman, then I'm invited to learn more about the full story there, which in turn makes me reinterpret what an Eshet Chayil is about, right? Because suddenly I know more about Elisheva's response to this day and what it meant for her to be an Eshet Chayil in that moment. Sort of those two directions, right? Kind of changing our reading of Eshet Chayil by fracturing the poem, and then also deepening our sense of each of these women's experiences by applying that verse from Eshet Chayil and seeing how it relates to this particular moment in their life. Okay, so that brings us to our final piece here, which is, right, what I titled A Contemporary Response. And this is from a book that Penina Edelman edited called Praise Her Work, which is really a book that's based on this Midrash HaGadol poem. And various scholars have kind of tackled each verse of Eshet Chayil and the biblical character it's associated with, done some research on various Midrashim about that woman, and then, among other things, written a sort of contemporary response and contemporary Midrash. And I brought you an excerpt of what Penina Edelman writes about Elisheva, based on the lines that we just looked at. And the piece that I left out, sort of a long piece here, is that one of the things we know about Elisheva is that she may have been, according to Midrash, she may have been one of the midwives in Egypt. Yeah, right. So she, Fran, and Puah, you know, are sort of names that the Midrash ends up associating later with Yochaved, with Miriam, and perhaps also with Elishama. And so part of this contemporary response that Penina Edelman does is to see those, right, that kind of work experience and that life experience of being a midwife as somehow preparing Elisheva to respond to the enormity of this eighth day of dedication and all of the joy that was contained in there and the loss. So would somebody like to read for us just this excerpt of Penina Edelman's contemporary midrash on Elisha?
When my two oldest sons, Nadab and Avihu, strode up to the altar in what they may have thought was an imitation of their father, the high priest, what was in their minds? How long had they been planning their subterfuge? What did they think would happen? Was it their glory or Hashem's glory they were honoring? When I saw them struck down, my spirit briefly left me and went to be with them. My boys had come from my womb, and now they were returning to the earth's womb. At that moment, I could not weep, and I could not laugh.
Yeah, go on.
Always changing, changing always. Nothing stays the same. Prepare for the sharp turn, the deep drop, the meteoric rise. A child breathes, stops breathing. Breathes, stops breathing. The sacred offering is acceptable. The sacred offering is unacceptable. I don't know what God wants from me. I know what God wants from me. I don't know. I know what I want from myself. I don't know. I laugh. Question. I weep. Question. Laugh. Weep. Laugh. Weep. Laugh.
So I guess for a minute or two, I want to see from you, right, where do you see the different midrashim that we've read, where do you see those coming out, especially in this poem?
Well, I think that the contemporary response is quite a long distance from to take off on trying to make sense of Elisheva. You know, I think that it's a stretch, even the midrash that describes every verse as belonging to a different woman. I think that's quite a stretch from what the author or the poet intended when he wrote it. Nevertheless,
yeah, I mean, this is the rabbinic excitement.
Right, this is, yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful way of looking at what Elisheva must have thought, you know, given her proximity to power and also her terrible loss. So I think it's lovely.
Okay, so mostly it feels like a stretch. Yeah, so what I want to sort of tease out from all of you is just like how rabbinic midrash usually has some kind of hook in Tanakh, right, in the biblical verses that it's responding to, what kind of pieces do you see within this poem, this contemporary poem, that seem to be coming like right out of the midrashic material, even if it then takes them in a different direction? Is there anything that you see that's like, oh, that looks like that's coming from a midrash? What are you guys?
Yeah, I think the most prominent one is the last is the last one.
Okay.
I think that's the closest connection.
Right. That laugh, weep ends in a laugh. But she's talking about her own. She laughs on that final day.
So I wonder then if I know what God wants from me is Ozva Dalavusha.
Yeah,
there's a surety in that statement.
The confidence.
Yes, that suggests both strength and glory.
Yeah, it's difficult to figure out where Oz Vahadar Levusha is in this poem, right? It could be there, maybe in the meteoric rise, right? The sort of heights that are described in that line. Yeah.
When I read it at first, before she read it out loud, I read it across.
So then I read it. Oh, changing always. I know what God wants from me. Nothing stays the same. I don't know. And therefore, at the very end, a sacred offering of unacceptable laugh. For me, the way it joins in with the other midrashim that we looked at was because in the first half, it's describing what happened. Things are changing. A child is born. Stops from that. And then the second column is her reaction to things. It's the same kind of thing like you have the text, but then it's like this talk, and then that's what she does. But what she's thinking is mehulal, the simcha, madasa. It's that kind of what's happening, and then your reaction to that.
Reaction.
A disconnect. Or an internal communication.
If we may go back to the original verse, I wonder if this is a reasonable interpretation. The 25, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Whether in fact this is in fact a reflection of the author's conception of what a woman of valor would how they would respond to adversity.
Mm-hmm.
That is, even if they don't have good, even if they don't have clothing, they still have strength and dignity, mm-hmm. and they are optimistic. They laugh. Until the end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do often get in Mishlei sort of two opposites within one verse. So you want to say, right, strength and dignity are her clothing, but alternatively, right, if those aren't her clothing, then she laughs.
No, I'm saying that even if she doesn't have fine clothing,
yeah.
she has strength and dignity, and she is optimistic, she laughs until the end, regardless of what happens.
Yeah, and you would read that back onto Elisheva here? I'm just suggesting
that it might be an alternative reading.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be. And then the Oz V'Hadar could become a little bit more figurative or perhaps, right, being embodied in things other than physical clothing.
I think the poem led me to reinterpret the line in Ishakayel as... I mean, you might think up to this point in it that there's so much wealth and there's so much industry that she might be led into thinking, okay, well, everything's all, you know, I've filled up my storehouse and everything's going to keep going well for me. And it seems like it's leading me more, like the poem saying, you know, be prepared for the fact that things can change at any moment. Now I'm reading, she laughs at the last day as she doesn't think that just because she's so industrious, that's going to insulate her from fate mm-hmm. and everything that happens. And that's maybe something that is a dynamic with Elisheva that, you know, she might have thought because all these wonderful things happened that therefore life is always going to be happy and secure, and the sort of cruel joke that was played on her is it's shown that that's not the case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kind of teaches her to approach the world with a sense of who knows, right? And yet maybe, like I was saying, maybe to still react to that somehow with dignity. Okay, so we actually have to close. Do you have a quick comment, Stephen?
Yeah, I have a response.
Okay.
I was very distraught by Elisheva's story here in the Midrash. And also the reaction that Molly had, it seems very far afield from what, you know, Ishikhail is all about. But I was really pleased because one of the things that bothers me about Ishikhail is the woman seems so perfect. She's so in control of everything in her life, right? And I think that's a far cry from any women's existence.
Or man.
Or human existence, absolutely. Where awful stuff just happens. And like you said, you know, don't lose control of your response. And I feel like the Midrash, though it is a far cry from the biblical poem, kind of brings back into focus real lives and how broken they are so often. And how we're left with this almost just stoic approach, which is sort of awful emotionally, but maybe a bit more real. And so I'm thankful to the Midrash for bringing that back in, even if it's like hard and heavy.
Okay, great. So I think we are going to have to close here, but maybe as a sort of summary then, going from, right, thinking back to what your initial reactions might have been to Ishikhayel, and then sort of combining Catherine and Stephen's comments here at the end, that reading, right, even just this one little, right, exploration of this particular verse and how, right, this is just looking at Elisheva, that one line on Elisheva, but then suddenly it makes you read all of Ishikhayel differently. where it's not necessarily about the idealized woman and all these high expectations, but actually suddenly there's real life and all the complexity of that. The beauty, the joy, the brokenness, and Batista Leoma Haran, we're left to sort of interpret that for ourselves. Thank you.
We think about when you say on Shabbat, when you're going into Shabbat, it's supposed to be like Olam Haba, and so that you're reading it on two levels. You can see it as
the perfect and the real. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And it's
one that says,